the lessons we learn in life is the way that we see ourselves is different from the way other people see us. We may see ourselves as supportive and protective of others, but others may see us as busybodies meddling in other people's lives. We may see ourselves as sensitive and accommodating to others. Others may see us as timid and weak. We may see ourselves as strong, authoritative, and decisive, but others may see us as harsh and domineering. The truth of it is that none of us ever see ourselves as we appear to others. It's like whenever we see ourselves in a mirror, for example, it's always an image that's reversed. And even if we acknowledge that, yes, people see us differently from the way we do, we're quick to make it their misconception. They're the ones who've got it wrong, we say. What's right is my view of myself, not theirs. Which goes to show that self-awareness is hard to come by. But there's no chance of that happening today. There's no escaping the fact that we are, all of us, the millionaire debtor in today's gospel that we've just heard. Here's a man who has a tremendous debt. He owes the king 10,000 talents, or denarii is another translation, a vast amount. And his debt is real, and above all, that the king has a right to have his money back. He has a right to demand the debt be paid. It's his money. He merely wants what is rightfully his. But the man has no money to pay what he owes. So the king has another right, the right to sell him into slavery with his wife and children, and that all his property be forfeited and lost forever. But then something happens. The king doesn't insist on his rights. He forgives the debt. The man now owes nothing. He is free of the burden. Which makes it all the more remarkable that the first thing he does is to go off and insist on his rights. He demands payment of a debt from a fellow servant, made all the more remarkable because the sum involved is ridiculously small in comparison with what had been his own debt. But the inappropriateness of what he's doing doesn't occur to him. He'd been saved by the king not insisting on his rights, yet he refuses to save someone else by insisting on his. The king gave up what was rightfully his. The man who was forgiven did not do the same. Those who are looking on see his actions for what they are, and they're horrified. But he is not horrified. The king's expectation that the man would have shared with others the generosity he'd received was misplaced. The man is blind to what's been done to him. It is as if the mercy shown to him had never happened. This is, of course, a terrible story, and it must leave us unhappy, particularly the conclusion. In anger, the Lord handed him over to be tortured, and so my heavenly Father will also do to you if you do not forgive your brother or sister from your heart. This is a severe message. But it needs to be severe to get through to us. We are all recipients of God's mercy. We have all at one time or another been forgiven, supported, and allowed to start fresh. fresh from the consequences of our past failures and mistakes and indiscretions, all these completely blotted out. We've been freed from the dire implications of our actions. And that specifically, in a general sense, with each new day we're given a chance to start all over again, to put the mistakes of yesterday behind us, and to set out to do what's loving and life-giving for others at whatever personal cost. And, in a specific sense, there are people who assure us that yes, our past stupidities and failures and insensitivities are forgiven, and that it's possible to start again, fresh. And we know this is true because we've all experienced it to be true. But even so, despite the fact that many times others haven't insisted on their rights and forgiven us, we still find it hard not to insist on ours. We've been forgiven over and over, but it still takes a huge effort from us to give up what's rightfully due to us and forgive. But that's the meaning of forgiveness. Forgiveness is not insisting on our rights. There's this saying in Australia, "She'll be right," meaning, I think, everything will be okay. Often when you hear that, you know, it's not going to be all right. But the idea is that everything will work out all right. And you hear it a lot. A saying you hear a lot in New York is, "Forget about it." Except you'll hear it said like, "Forget about it," meaning, get over it. Move on. Put it out of your mind. And this is what Matthew is getting at. You have rights. You are entitled to this or that. But other people have had rights as well, and they've put them aside in order to forgive you and make things possible for you. But here's the thing, says Matthew. If we insist on our rights to the detriment of others, and refuse to countenance the forgiveness of others, then the implications are dire. If we don't treat others with the same understanding that God is constantly showing towards us, and that other people are constantly showing towards us, our life will be tortured. Matthew, as he always does, exaggerates. He's the master of hyperbole. The way he puts it is that God will make life hell for us. We know, as he knew, that God would not do this, because if he did, he would not be God. What Matthew's getting at is that we'll make life hell for ourselves if we fail to demonstrate the same compassion to others as is constantly being shown to us. What lies ahead may well be a life of clear and legally correct consequences, but also a life of torture. Be careful, says Matthew, for when we deny forgiveness to others, we are denying forgiveness to those whom God has already forgiven. And who are we to disturb God's peace with the strictures and penalties of our own devising? Being with others, says Matthew, isn't an opportunity for judgment, but a reminder of how much we ourselves are continually being remade through the forgiveness and compassion of the God who is always for us, our Creator, Redeemer, and Inspirer. That same God to whom is most justly due all praise, thanksgiving, glory and honour this day and throughout all ages to come.